Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now we'll open up the phones on the question, assume a Clinton win in our angry, polarized nation. How should she try to bring the country together? Or is that not a high priority? 212-433-WNYC. Again, assume a Clinton win in our angry, polarized nation for the sake of this conversation. How should she try to bring the country together? Or is that not a high priority? 212-433-9692. One of my own thoughts is that she could try to bring together non-college-educated Americans, non-college-educated whites, and non-college-educated blacks and Latinos are so politically divided in who they're going to vote for, even though their economic interests may be broadly overlapping. Maybe more access to college for the kids in those families and better benefits for those over 55 who are not likely to be retrained for the new economy might be a path to a unity platform after the election. Most middle-class jobs require more skills these days, which is so much of the issue. And she's got a big free public college plan that would be paid for by taxing the very top earners a little bit more. The Wall Street Journal editorial page may not like it. Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan may not like it. But Clinton and Bernie and Trump populists might. And her Medicare for 55-plus plan, they would have to buy in, but it's not Obamacare, it's Medicare, might be just the revision to Obamacare to help ease the pain for the most vulnerable aging people in the country and in the economy, 55-plus people whose good manufacturing jobs are not coming back and who can't probably be retrained for good new jobs in time to work their way up to good salaries in their working years. And in addition, she could adopt Trump's popular position on trade and submit NAFTA for renegotiation, even though she defended it on the campaign trail. There is a legal mechanism by which to do it, and people would rally behind her. So maybe there are some grounds for popular unity between her voters and many of Trump's, even if they have to ignore the more conventionally Republican Congress for a while. It's more conventionally Republican than is Trump. Unity is not going to come on the Supreme Court. It's not going to be on guns. It's not going to be on immigration. Maybe she can go for it where the opportunity exists. And those are just a few thoughts that I had. And they could be all wrong on policy. They could be all wrong on the political opportunity. It's just one model. And I only throw it out there to get you all going on this call-in with your own ideas. Assume a Clinton win in our angry, polarized nation. How should she try to bring the country together? Or is that not a high priority? And just let me go into that model for just a second. That unity is impossible, and she should start out proposing the toughest progressive platform she can, even knowing the Republican Congress will block everything. The Tea Party, Freedom Caucus, Trump people will take to the streets all over the country. Remember, George W. Bush won election by the skin of his Electoral College teeth in 2000, but under Karl Rove's tutelage went on to curry almost all his favor with his base, evangelicals and free marketers, and after 9/11, the neocon war hawks, and it won him re-election in 2004. Never mind that by the end of his term, the national economy, Iraq, and his approval ratings were all in a shambles. Obama tried some compromise at the outset, and the Republican Congress wouldn't have it. In that scenario, what should Clinton do first? So again, assume a Clinton win in our angry, polarized nation. How should she try to bring the country together? Or is that not a high priority for you? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we'll take your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our phones are open on the proposition, assume a Clinton win in our angry, polarized nation. How should she try to bring the country together? Or is that not a high priority? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's start with Anthony and Mamaroneck. Hi, Anthony, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. You know, this is what I think. First, she should make a statement to the senators in about trying to get along with them in a bipartisan way, and then talk to the disenfranchised people in this country, mainly the white disenfranchised people who are so prone for Trump. With all the lies you hear him talk, and you know the fact checks. If we see to just talk to the people, because we know they're not going to be able to bring back those factory jobs. But maybe she has another plan, and just include those people in it, because that's the people that she's missing right now. Those are the people that are upset, and I don't blame them for what's going on in the country. The loss of factory jobs, the homelessness. You know, to me, when white people are homeless in this country, it's scary. It's really scary.
Anthony.
I think that would be a big help.
Thank you for starting us off. Please call again. Laura on Staten Island. You're on WNYC. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Yeah, I think that a lot of her ability to unite the country, again, is going to depend on whether or not the Democrats take the Senate. And with them the New York Times is predicting like about a 50% chance the Democrats taking it. And I think if they do win, it'll show more solidarity for Democrats generally rather than just a not Trump win.
Yeah, though she's still got almost certainly a Republican House, which could obstruct everything.
Right, exactly.
Laura, thank you. Rob in Suffolk County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rob.
Hi, happy election eve, everybody.
Same to you.
I liked what Obama did in the early...
as Eeyore would say, if it is a happy election eve, but
yeah,
go ahead.
Exactly, thanks. I liked what Obama did early on, where he did appoint a Republican or two. There are a number of moderate governors and folks who have seemed to be reasonable, maybe adding them to the cabinet early on, and doing some projects, like the lady said before, infrastructure, maybe a high-speed train in parts of the country that would give jobs.
Yeah, and pulling in a high-profile Republican, like I've been thinking about whether there's a significant role for John Kasich.
Me too, same name.
And yet, Kasich's pretty conservative on a lot of, fundamental policy things, even though he came off like sort of the reasonable guy in the room among those 17 Republican candidates during the primaries. I wonder how much trouble if she gave Kasich a major role and gave him a say in policy, a real say, whether that comes into direct conflict with the Bernie Elizabeth Warren wing, who's also core to her ability to govern.
True. I think Chris O'Shea, a former Connecticut Republican, also kind of out of the game now, is the name that could come up. You know, there's a lot of Northeast Bloomberg even.
Rob, thank you very much. Mark in West Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Hi, I think she has a political, legal, and moral obligation to help create jobs, and I think she could do this by targeting those states where the white disenfranchised males are still there, frustrated, and create a mechanism whereby she can create jobs by rebuilding infrastructure in old bridges, tunnels, roads, the grid, all the things that everybody talks about but does little. And I think there is the opportunity where those kind of skill sets that those individuals have could create a rebirth in those regions that are absolutely necessary. And I think as president, she has an obligation to do so. Whether the mechanism she utilizes is getting Republicans on her side by putting them on a cabinet or by allowing very low interest rates to states that are run by Republican governors, but they have to be targeted because it requires not just a healing, a cosmetic healing, but an actual attempt at creating jobs by utilizing those areas that are in need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one interesting thing about that, I think, is that Trump also talks about the need for a lot of infrastructure spending. There's been so little coverage of policy during the campaign in general that people have missed that Trump talks about a massive infrastructure program, and that's one of the ways that he's different from the conventional Republicans. If Clinton could somehow pick up, of course, as on most things, he's incredibly vague about what that means. But if she could pick up something from his language, something from whoever his policy wonks have been, and say, look, Trump was for this. This is one of the reasons he got a lot of votes. I'm for this. This is one of the reasons I got elected. And let's you know, put pressure on the Republican Congress to approve a big infrastructure spending plan. You know, perhaps, like you say, there's some opportunity there. I think related to that is, since a lot of the manufacturing job population that's older, that has lost those jobs, they're not going to be retrained for construction jobs. Either they're too old or the skills are still not the ones they have because they are in different portions of the manufacturing economy. Some of the union leaders talk about the need for just a lot of welfare programs. You know, dare I say the word welfare, that the people who are especially 55 plus and left behind in the manufacturing economy, and this is a lot of Trump's base, just need to be supported. And the country needs to admit it. We just have to pay for these people who the globalized economy that the U.S. government has helped push forward, who've been left behind, just need to be supported. And whether that's letting them buy into Medicare at an early age at an affordable price, or direct payments, or whatever, maybe this is something that needs to come up, because the Trump voters, you know, the analysts have said they're not against Social Security. They're not against Medicare. These are not welfare is shame, welfare is evil, the poor are undeserving voters, for the most part, at least when it comes to their own demographic. So maybe some kind of welfare program that explicitly acknowledges the demographics that have been left behind, largely the core of Trump's demographic, might even be something that she brings up, although I acknowledge that that's politically risky and would take some additional guts than any politician has had so far. Omid in Bridgeport, you're on WNYC. Omid, thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that I thought the mistake Obama made when he came in was thinking that he could compromise with the Republicans that had stated it explicitly as their mission to stop him from accomplishing anything. And
that will happen again. No
of
doubt.
Of course. I mean,
it's already happening.
I don't think you can compromise with a party that's kind of showing its base to be kind of veering in the direction of white nationalism. So you just use whatever political power you have as the president, and if you have the Senate, to just push through your agenda as best as you can.
Yeah, but I think that this is the starting point. At least I have some hope that this would be the starting point and not the ending point. Knowing that Obama tried to come in with some Republican-ish proposals like cap and trade because it was a market system for dealing with carbon limits, and the individual mandate because it was part of this whole market-oriented private sector, you know, universal health care plan. And then they turned around on proposals that came out of conservative think tanks and so forth like those and just said no, and suddenly they were socialism. Assuming that she sees that failure, I don't know what it is, but maybe crafting some other way around the Republican Congress as the party of no. And I keep thinking maybe it's by going over their heads and trying to find some of these economic unity ideas and start to batter them from the outside rather than go in and trying to make deals with McConnell and Ryan and them. You know, I don't know. But I don't think we want to see her start by just saying, well, there's no point in dealing with Congress. I'm just going to do what I can by executive order like Obama did in his last year when he gave up on Congress and start there, because it might be more of a surrender than she needs to make.
Well, I think it should be more like what Bush did when he had to deal with a Democratic Congress and Senate, which is just get your policies through. You can find people out there as long as you don't try to concede every point to just get, you know, a wide base of support from the other side. Like, yeah, maybe you can get a few people over, just enough to get what you need passed.
Maybe.
I mean, use politics.
Yes, I know. Use politics. And maybe she's got some relationships. She did have a reputation in the Senate of working and playing very well with others. Obama didn't have much time in the Senate to build those relationships. And she had, good relationships and a bipartisan spirit and was willing to make deals. The one I said Bush played entirely to his base. There were a few exceptions. One of them was No Child Left Behind, which even though it's quite discredited now, was something that he crossed the aisle to work with Ted Kennedy on shortly after he was elected. And that bill had things that Democrats wanted, like counting by race and class for whether schools were succeeding enough to, put an emphasis on ending or minimizing the racial disparity in education outcomes. And it had things that the right wanted, like labeling schools passing or failing, and then maybe giving vouchers to the parents of schools that failed year after year. So it had some of those things. That was a bipartisan bill. And Hillary Clinton presumably and her team are already looking for those opportunities on what, I don't know, but everybody's so focused on how the two candidates are trying to destroy each other that those things are going on neatly behind the scenes now, presumably. I have no idea if anything remotely like that is going on in Trump world. Maybe it is. Based on the Times story this morning, just about how his campaign, even in these last days, can't even get it together and be on the same page, I kind of doubt that they're that organized. But I have a feeling Clinton world is, but we'll see. Lisa in Leonia, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. I have called in before as a Hillary supporter. I certainly hope that she wins and we are having this discussion in a reality-based way. I was making calls for Hillary, and I was often getting people who were opposed to her, and we had conversations, and
To what state? Were you calling to swing states?
Yes, I was calling Ohio the other day. This was for MoveOn.org.
Uh-huh.
And what really struck me, and I'm glad that you're having this segment, was that people need to listen to one another on an individual basis. And I had respectful conversations with people. I tried to change their minds, and I knew that I wasn't able to, but I let them air their grievances with Hillary. I made my case. We were polite. I said, thank you. I know there's so much anger. We all know this has been so bruising. So what I propose sounds Pollyannish, but I think Hillary needs to have a national day of healing for our democracy where people spend a day and they talk to one another at the civic level, grassroots level, churches, community centers, neighbors, turn around, shake their hands, talk to one another, and listen. And she's good at going into communities and listening, because I think if we can establish some comedy again amongst people who have different opinions, perhaps that can actually filter up toward Congress. Congress doesn't hang out together anymore. They go home. They fundraise all the time. They don't play tennis together. We don't have those relationships of Kennedy and Hatch anymore, mm-hmm. where they, couldn't tear each other to shreds because they actually had some friendship outside the halls of Congress. Let's try to establish some feeling that people don't have to be at each other's throats all the time. Nothing gets done. I hope she gets a Democratic majority in the Senate, and that might help break the gridlock, but we still have to look at the people who feel disenfranchised by the loss.
Lisa, thank you. I think you're onto something. I think it would take more of a sustained effort than one National Day of Healing, but I think that would be one of the tests for President Hillary Clinton, assuming there is President Hillary Clinton, and her husband was good at it, and she may find some allies in some wings of the Republican Party who think things have just gone too far, and start with a core and work out, and if she can seem like she really does feel the pain and get the pain, to use a Bill Clinton term, of people who didn't vote for her, of people who were some of the most vociferous Trump supporters, but who Bill Clinton connected with them or people in those demographics to some degree in the 90s, and do it on a sustained way so it doesn't seem like she's condescending to them or dismisses them, then maybe. It probably has to be part of her path. Does she have it in her? I think maybe. Assuming she's elected, time will tell. We'll see if she makes a good effort in that direction. But Lisa, thank you very much. And everybody, thanks for calling in response to the question, assume a Clinton win in our angry, polarized nation. How should she try to bring the country together, or is that not a high priority? You can keep tweeting your thoughts at Brian Lehrer.